Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Where are Corey and Will? Jen's mother came in the front door and looked around. Your grandsons, she smiled, are down at the creek getting filthy. They'll be glad to give you big muddy hugs when they return. Jen's mom grimaced. What are they doing there? Don't they have chores and things? Well, Jen and her mom sat down at the kitchen table. They just needed some downtime. Downtime? Jen's mom wrinkled her nose. What's that? Oh, it's time to themselves when no one's expecting anything from them, Jen replied. Time to themselves? Jen's mom repeated. Isn't that what kids have constantly these days? It's not like they have to get up early to stoke the furnace or feed the chickens. I don't even know of any with a paper route. Jen grinned. Yes, that's true, Mom, but kids today lead pretty scheduled lives. The boys have something nearly every waking minute. So it's good for them, for all of us, to have a little time out just for themselves. Her mom replied with a wink. I thought that was what old age was for. From a parent's perspective, what should we know about downtime for children? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest has experience working with kids and their parents, and when it comes to downtime, he can share what he's learned. Dr. William R. Stixrud is a clinical neuropsychologist in private practice and is director of William Stixrud & Associates, a group practice specializing in the neuropsychological assessment of children, adolescents, and adults with learning, attentional, social, and/or emotional disorders. Dr. Stixrud is also a member of the adjunct faculty of the Children's National Medical Center, and he holds a faculty appointment as assistant professor of psychiatry, behavioral sciences, and pediatrics at the George Washington University School of Medicine and Health Sciences. Dr. Stixrud is the father of a grown son and daughter. Welcome to Parents' Perspective.
Thank you so much. Nice to be here.
What's the biggest myth parents have about kids' downtime?
It's that if kids aren't doing something that appears to be productive, if it's not goal-directed, it doesn't seem to have some purpose, it must be a waste of time. And the idea that more is better, that if they can study more, if they can be taught more, if they can practice more, if they can learn more sports or music, that life is better. And it's a myth.
Is this very American? You know, doing, getting, let's make it happen, solve problems,
busy, busy, busy.
Well, it's certainly not limited to America. I mean, we think of just this Tiger Mom book.
Right. You know,
I think it's not limited, but certainly a very wise guy who died recently describes America as a society that's chronically anxious and reactive. And certainly in this culture, adults have very little downtime. We have all this time-saving technology. We sleep 25% less than we did 100 years ago or something like that. And yet, adults, we crave time for ourselves. We crave downtime. And kids do too. So it's not uniquely American, but in this culture, certainly adults are driven. And certainly, I think that many of the decisions that are made about kids are based in fear and competition. Again, the idea that if another kid has three sports, and my kid's only doing one, that kid's going to get ahead. Or if that kid has 3 hours of homework a night, and my kid only has one, this kid's going to get way ahead. And I think that it's an illusion.
Now, why do kids need downtime?
Well, if we let's start with what I call extreme downtime, which is sleep and other activities where you simply have your eyes closed and you aren't moving. One of the most interesting things I ever learned, there's a study that was done at the University of San Francisco in 2001 where they took kittens who were just a few weeks old and they provided visual stimulation. And one group got 6 hours of stimulation and then slept normally. One group got 6 hours of stimulation and then was kept awake for the next several hours. One group got 12 hours of stimulation. And the only group that showed any change in brain development was the group that slept. And it just turns out that the way that the human brain develops is through stimulation or activity and then rest or downtime. And in human beings, this guy named Matthew Walker said college students, they'll type 43241, it's a little sequence like that, and they'll practice, try to do it faster and faster. And they eventually, they'll plateau after a few minutes, an hour of practicing. And then they go to sleep and they wake up in the morning without any further practice. They can type it faster than they could the night before. And they see increased connections in their brain that were laid down when they sleep. So the most extreme forms of downtime, when you're sitting there doing nothing, when you're fast asleep, when you're in deep sleep, all this incredible activity, reorganizing, integrating, is going on in your brain. So that for the human being, for the human beings to develop in a healthy way, we have to have an appropriate balance between activity, stimulation, and periods when we're offline. I've published a couple of studies on the effects of meditation on kids who have ADHD. And it's dramatic in the sense that these kids who sit for 10 minutes twice a day with their eyes closed, apparently wasting time, they learn better, their teachers observe significantly improved focus and attention. The kids themselves report 56% fewer symptoms of stress and anxiety after 3 months. So even the most extreme forms of downtime, where you're doing nothing, turn out to be tremendously valuable. And the other side of it is we know that kids who are chronically overscheduled, kids who chronically feel that stress from time pressure or urgency, are much more at risk for mental health problems, that chronic stress has a terrible effect on learning and brain development. So there's a lot of reasons why the most extreme forms of downtime and other things like play, just simply dramatic play, hugely important and very underused by kids these days, are really important in kids' development.
Now, why is the dramatic play such an important piece?
Well, you look across species and you see even lizards. There's all kinds of species you wouldn't think that engage in some kind of playfulness.
You mean and, the lizards play house? Well, they're,
yeah, right. It's crazy hat day. Yeah. But for dramatic play, where kids are actually engaged in character, there's research that's come out recently that demonstrates that kids who engage in dramatic play actually make better academic progress than kids who have more academic instruction.
And why is that?
Well, I think that in part because dramatic play requires kids to practice self-control. There's been studies, for example, that if you simply ask a kid to stand still for as long as he can, contemporary kids, what they found is that 7-year-olds now could stand still almost as long as a 5-year-old could in 1940. And the 5-year-olds could stand still almost as long as a 3-year-old could 70 years ago. However, if you ask a contemporary 7-year-old to pretend that he's a guard and he has to stand perfectly still, they can stand still much, much longer. That kids in play use a variety of self-regulatory skills that they don't normally use. To take a character, you have to use your imagination, you have to hold your ideas in your working memory, you have to flexibly adapt to other kids. And people think that it's through the exercise of these very important executive functions in dramatic play that play has a very powerful effect on cognitive development in kids. And it really turns out that if kids rested more and played more, they'd do better than if they study more and practice more. I mean, if I was a coach, I'd much rather have my kids practice 45 minutes less a day and have them sleep 45 minutes more per night. I mean, there's all kinds of evidence in development of athletic skills. They'd recently tested players on the UCLA men's varsity basketball team. And when they slept for 9 hours versus six, they consistently shot better, run faster, jump higher. Or the study with the paddle ball, where somebody will practice until they can hit that darn thing 60% of the time. And then they go to sleep at night and they get up and they're up to 80% without any practice. And so if you want to be an athlete, it makes sense to go offline, to really seriously go offline. And if you want to learn well, it makes sense to maintain a balance between stimulation, direct instruction, practice, study, and going offline. Going offline may mean playing and completely forgetting about it. It may mean meditating. It may mean sleeping. It may mean just watching TV for a while. It may mean having dinner with your family. But there's enormous evidence that having a good balance between stimulation and going offline is hugely important for development.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on Downtime for Kids.
The popular book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Bill Stixrud about downtime for children.
Dr. Stixrud, at what age is it appropriate for kids to be introduced to the whole idea of downtime? An amount of time every day, or how long a time, how frequent?
I just had lunch with a psychologist who evaluated a kid who watched baby Einstein videos 14 hours a day.
14
hours? No.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Wouldn't that be considered torture?
Well, how a kid could watch it, yeah.
But awful.
But the point I'm going to make is that even babies need an appropriate balance. Babies do well to have time in their crib by themselves. And people vary dramatically. Anybody who's had more than one kid knows that they have very different needs for stimulation and closeness and being held and how much time that they need to sleep. But a lot of babies need time just to be in their crib or need time just to be by themselves. And I think that part of the sense of parenting is being aware of what kids need. And it's not that we're talking to our baby about you need your diet, but I think when they're younger, you know, we're observant, and we can tell when babies are overloaded and they're overstimulated. They get fussy, they cry, they get irritable, they seem to crave being held. And so even with infants, we want to be careful to make sure that we aren't overstimulating them. And as kids get older, we want to make a transition, I think, between observing and structuring their life and building in periods where they can just be by themselves or play with their sister, be in the neighborhood playing, or times where they read quietly or private time with a parent, where we build these into their schedule. And as they get older, what we want to do is we want to be talking with them about what they need. We want kids to be practicing, you know, once they're 7, 8, 9, 10 and older, practicing tuning into themselves and paying attention to how stressed am I? Am I overscheduled? Do I have enough stimulation? What do I need?
Now, what's the difference between downtime and what a lot of parents would consider just loafing, goofing off?
Yeah. Well, you know, people do well to have some time just to loaf and goof off. I mean, I think Anna Quinlan talked about the gift of loafing. And most really creative people have time in their lives where they had time to kill. And from a creativity and imagination point of view, having time with nothing to do is not a bad thing. And so I think that one of the greatest challenges we face in this culture, the average teenager, I think, spends somewhere on the order of 10 to 12 hours a day interacting with technology, if you factor in all the multitasking. And for many kids, checking their email or texting and being on the internet and doing two or three things at a time, it feels like downtime, where it's actually stressful. It's stressful to be multitasking. It's extremely inefficient. And so I think in some ways that kids who are sitting around playing with toy soldiers or playing with action figures, that it's a good thing. I think that if kids don't want to do anything, the kids just want to lay around, I think that can be a sign of depression or other issues. But I think we want kids to have time in their life, regular times in their life, where nothing's scheduled. And if they want to fool around a little bit, they want to sit and look at a book, that's a good thing.
Now, would watching television qualify?
Well, you know, when my kids were little, they could watch, usually we let them watch 45 minutes a day of TV while my wife and I meditated in the afternoon. And they could watch a video or public television. And when my son was about 4, he went to somebody's house and they watched Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And he came back and told his sister, "Hey, Jor, there's more than one channel on the TV."
That's cute.
Yeah. And so I think that the TV's okay. But I think that what we want to do is we simply want to set limits. And I think TV's okay. Video games they're what kids do these days. And I think that what we want to do when kids are younger is we want to set limits on them. And as they get a little bit older, we want to help them learn to set limits on it so that they aren't spending an inordinate amount of time sitting in front of a screen relatively passively.
How can parents enable their kids to make productive use of their downtime without dictating?
Well, I think that luckily most kids are interested in stuff. Most kids like doing something on their own. Most kids have some kind of interest in drawing, or most kids like to play. So generally, I think that with young kids, if we build in, parents simply build in periods that aren't scheduled, where you can play. Kids will choose to draw, or they'll have a friend, or they'll play with their sister, they'll do something. I think that, you know, once they get older, it's hard to impose. Parents will. But certainly when they're younger, we can help them structure periods in the day where they don't have anything that's scheduled. In the same way as adults, I mean, most of the adults that I know, they're underemployed or they're overemployed and they're scrambling to have enough time for themselves. And the way you do it is you schedule it in. You schedule in time to be offline if you don't have anything to do.
It's funny. I think we think of downtime very often as alone time, but often it's just a time when our kids can do what they want to do. Very often they'll do it with siblings, for better or for worse. And I remember one thing that was an ongoing downtime project in my house when my kids were growing up, and we called it the fort, which was made out of all kinds of contraptions, and it lived in our basement, and it required all kinds of infusions of things that, you know, after a while, if we couldn't find anything in the house, we knew that it had ended up in the fort, and it was made of trash cans and tablecloths and blankets and anything anybody could possibly think of.
I think forts often begin as a blanket over a card table.
Right.
And then they mushroom and they spread, and as you say, they grow. And most of us probably have had them in our homes at some point when we've had little children.
Exactly. And it's a downtime activity. And I remember in my house, the kids did things together that we never thought they would ever do together. They had all kinds of projects. And at one point, they decided that they were going to sleep in the fort. And I said to them something like, well, you can't sleep in the fort because you guys can't sleep in the same room. You know, you fight all the time. And so they said, oh, no, no, we're not in the same room. The baby seat is between us. And so they were using the baby as a buffer. At one point, they had a lot of artistic stuff that would go on. And they had all kinds of things that they would drag down into the basement, things that, you know, I would wonder how they could possibly get it in there.
Like things that built a ramshackle recording studio in your basement.
Exactly.
Everything they could find, tape decks, amplifiers, things you wouldn't think of in quiet time.
Absolutely. At one point, somebody hollered up, I remember, Mom, can you bring down a multiple socket? And I'm thinking, wait a minute, you can come get a multiple socket. Well, came the response, you wanted us to get some rest. Well, now we're resting. So it was really on and on. It sort of had a life of its own, and it was a project, but it was a nice downtime activity that the kids participated in together, but they were in charge of themselves.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on downtime for kids. Parents' Perspective needs you. Your feedback, your opinions, and not least, your donations that help with the cost of producing this award-winning program.
Visit us online at www.parentsperspective.org and click on to Give Direct, I Give, or eBay at Mission Fish. Please help us continue to help you. Thank you.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Bill Stixrud about downtime for kids.
What results have you seen when downtime's a comfortable part of a child's life?
Well, I've seen it in different ways. I've seen many kids over the years who always, when they got home from school, they always played for an hour in their room. And even as teenagers, they'd still go into the room and they'd do something, whether they build with Lego or they do something, or they'd play with a sibling. And where this, the routine was after school, you decompress, you wind down, you kind of recover from the day. And I've done this for a long time. There's a kid who's probably about 23 now that I initially tested when he was 5. And I make a living in part by testing kids for learning problems and that kind of stuff. This guy, when he was five, I asked him the first question on a vocabulary test, which is, what's a cow? And he said, I can't believe you don't know that. He's just graduating from college this spring, and he's somebody who is always a beautifully regulated kid, and his parents always, you know, built in time for him when he came from school, recognized that if they tried to do homework right after school or they tried to give him too much, he'd decompose. He simply had to have this unstructured free time. So I've seen it in many kids where it's just part of the routine from the time they grow up, where it's just healthy for them. I've seen many kids who are way over-programmed, where you simply have them take a season off from doing a sport, and they take a private art lesson once a week. And I would say that one of the most dramatic things that I've seen is the effect of parents scheduling regular private time with their kids. And when my kids were younger and lived at home, I scheduled in from the time they were probably three or four, an hour a week. I had two kids, so 1 hour on Sunday for each one, where we just do something that was mutually enjoyable, and depending on their age. And it was where we didn't plan it out necessarily, but we just said, how should we fill the next hour together? And I've seen many kids who don't have enough time with their parents be healed dramatically. Kids who seem depressed or kids who are angry and frustrated a lot, dramatic differences by having this regular hour of downtime with a parent. It's very powerful. I've also seen it because I'm a fan of meditation. I've seen kids who have been able to build in a regular meditation, 10, 15 minutes, particularly in school, where there's dramatic transformations, simply going offline for 10 minutes twice a day. I've seen it in kids who hate school, extremely pressured by having several hours of homework, change schools where they have an hour and a half of homework as opposed to three or four. And that's been very dramatic. And the changes in the quality of life of kids who build in, they simply have more downtime because they aren't responsible for this ridiculous amount of homework.
Dr. Stixrud, what kinds of things do you recommend to parents when you see either them or their children or both?
One of the things that I'm really focusing on now is trying to protect the downtime of being in bed. Because so many kids these days, they're texting until all hours of the night. And I think that one of the most useful things that families can do is agree to everybody, check in their portable technology, check it in before you go to bed. And making bedrooms technology-free zones. Certainly, I recommend that we try to avoid over-scheduling kids. And again, as they get older, the kids are the ones who can tell us, this is too much for me. Or I'm bored, I want to do more. We want them to practice making decisions about what feels right to them. And one of the best forms of downtime, I mean, all kinds of research backs this up, is simply families having dinner together, regular meal time. And when kids have excessive homework, I urge that parents try to work with their school or try to find another school. I mean, we'll talk about having an appropriate balance between stimulation and rest or downtime. I tried to teach myself Hebrew a couple years ago. And one night I was working on it at 8:30 at night. And I didn't feel tired. But I could read like a dozen letters at that time. And I was trying to sound out these little three-letter words. I was painstakingly trying to sound them out. And I read the words in the first line. I go to the second line and I think, these are even harder. And then I look up and they're exactly the same words that are in the first line. But at 8:30, I was too tired to recognize it. And I'm saying that I didn't feel tired, but I was too tired to learn. And this is probably why, after 80 years of research, there's no evidence that homework contributes to learning in elementary school kids, because if you're tired or you're stressed, you can't learn. And so one of the things I emphasize to all parents is, if kids are spending an inordinate amount of time on homework, that work with the school, find another school, or simply tell the school, my kid's not going to do it. Because it's completely counterproductive from a learning point of view, from an emotional point of view, from a health point of view.
Unfortunately, we're going to have to close, and we could, of course, talk about this for a whole lot longer. Before we do, what resources would you suggest for our listeners who want to explore further some of these issues that we've been discussing?
There's a book by Marion Diamond called Magic Trees of the Mind. And Marion Diamond, she's a scientist at Berkeley, who discovered that experience actually affects the brain. She was the first who studied this in rats. And a very wise person. And this book, Magic Trees of the Mind, it was one of the first books written on brain development in children. But so I think from a very wise and balanced perspective. She saw if you take these rats who've been raised in isolation, you put them in a cage with other rats and stuff to do, that their brain develops dramatically. You see all these increased connections in their brain. And yet she also appreciates the importance of rest and recovery and downtime. And so I love her work. There's a new book on adolescence by Lawrence Steinberg called You and Your Teen, I think that is very wise. Lawrence Steinberg is a brain guy. He's an adolescent brain guy and really appreciates the importance for teenagers of having a healthy balance of stimulation, activity, and downtime.
Well, this has obviously been a very productive time for us. Thank goodness it wasn't late at night. But we are delighted that you could come. So, Dr. Bill Stixrud, thank you so much for being with us today and helping us discuss downtime for children.
Thanks for having me.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And please spell anything that's not obvious. Tell us if you can what station you're tuning into and mention show number 482.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. Or check us out at facebook.com/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from you, our listeners. Thank you. Our sound engineer is Kent Hitchcock. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.